the House Committee on Consumer Protection for the Oregon Legislature to order. It's Monday, March 26th. We're going to have a work session on three bills, House Bill 2221, 2792, and 2224. Before we get into public hearing. And with that, I will open a work session on House Bill 2221. And do I have somebody from Department of Consumer and Business Services who would like to testify on House Bill 2221 for us? Just like an overview of the amendments to House Bill 2221. Now, it may not be exactly your expertise, but...
Mr. Chair, you guessed it exactly here. Exposed. My name, for the record, Joel Lario. I'm the Administrator of the Insurance Division within the Department of Consumer and Business Services. The amendments that you have in front of you in the Dash 2s are very technical amendments. I couldn't go through them and explain what they are specifically, but they generally relate to clarifying who it is that has to file with us, and we want it to be clear that it is the discount plans themselves and not the providers who may participate in those discount plans. So that's the reason for changing the word person to individual. And then the rest of the changes are quite technical in nature, and if we want to get into them, I would have to call on one of my staff people to help me with that. But we our understanding is that with these technical amendments, the bill has no opposition.
So you've heard no opposition to this bill, what you're telling me, with the amendments?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that is correct. Without the amendments, there were some people who said that the exact authority we had under this bill was somewhat unclear, and so that's the main purpose of the amendments.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Nelson?
Thank you very much. I only when we had the First Amendment that dated March the 2nd, the issue was that big Section 8. Oh, no, not big Section 8. Yeah, big Section 8. Where is it? Yeah, I can't find it. Section 8, we need to clarify that section regarding disclosure per the Model Act.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, yes. I don't have that set of the Dash 1s in front of me, but I believe what you're referring to is the section that clarified our authority to regulate use of insurance-like terms. The original bill spoke to the issue of not having these discount plans advertised as insurance, and some people brought to our attention the notion that you can say, don't call it insurance, but if you can use words like copay in your advertising that people conjure up, then insurance. And so the bill, the revisions in Section 8, I believe, gave us new authority to regulate use of insurance-like terms.
Just a quick follow-up, please.
Follow-up, please.
So it doesn't specify the procedure for doing that. I'm just curious, what is the procedure? So if I'm submitting advertising because I want to sell this plan, would that be an administrative rule?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, it could turn into an administrative rule, but typically with these kinds of bills, unless we see a need to do it in an administrative rule, we might not. I apologize again, I'm not prepared on the technical parts of this bill. I looked at it as work session, so I didn't bring that whole file with me. I should have probably.
Just last follow-up, please.
Oh,
sorry, who would know what the procedure would be? I mean, this for curing this language issue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I believe that let me just check. Shelley, do you have the rest of the bill? So we don't have it here, but I believe what's in the rest of the bill simply addresses what the standards are, and as long as the law is clear-cut, those standards would just be the standards, and the reason why we would do rulemaking would be if someone disputed our interpretation of the statute. So the normal procedure would simply be that the statute would be enforceable.
Thank you, and I assume the department is fine with the dash two amendments and have looked at those relatively thoroughly.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. We are the sponsors essentially of the dash two amendments. They were again technical issues to clarify for some of the interested parties who exactly we had authority over, and the main issue was that we have authority over the discount plan itself, but not over providers and others who may be associated with the discount plan. We want the authority to go to the discount plan itself.
Was there any other concerns from the committee on this bill with the dash two amendments? If not, go for a motion.
I move that we adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 2221.
Representative Bonamici has moved to adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 2221. Any further discussion? Being none, Mike, can you call the roll?
President Malizio?
Aye.
President Jones? Aye. President Brown?
Aye.
President Riley?
Aye.
President Bonamici?
Aye.
Motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move that we send House Bill 2221 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
As amended?
As amended by the dash two amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bonamici moves House Bill 2221 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, Mike, would you call the roll?
Aye.
Representative
Dillon?
Aye.
Representative
Riley?
Aye.
Representative Bonamici?
Aye.
Representative
Nelson?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2221 receiving the required votes. It's moved on to the floor.
Can we put this on the consent agenda?
Would somebody like to carry this on the floor? Otherwise, I would put it on the consent agenda.
I would not. I'm here to carry it, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bonamici will carry the bill on the floor. Thank you. Thank you. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2221 and open a work session on, let's skip out of order, House Bill 2224. And we have amendments on this, too. Could we again get CBS? I know we've had these amendments for a little while, but we've had this bill before us a couple of times. And
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, Joel Ario, the administrator with the Insurance Division at the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And this bill I do know. And the amendments here essentially replace the original draft of the bill to more clarify exactly what we're talking about. And I would say there are two essential points here. One, it says that to the extent that we are going to rely on the Interstate Compact for specific standards, those standards have to be equal to or better than our standards in terms of consumer protection, so we're not looking to sacrifice anything on consumer protection in this bill. And then secondly, insofar as the compact is still a developing entity, the bill is an experiment. It phases out it sunsets in 4 years. So the idea basically is we're not ready yet to say the compact is a good idea, that we ought to join it, but we do think it has enough promise to say that we ought to look carefully at those standards over the next 4 years, where we can adopt them so that we can focus on other priorities, particularly suitability, which is a much higher consumer protection concern of ours these days, and then in 4 years the bill phases out, and that's what the amendments say.
Thank you. Are there any questions, concerns from the committee on House Bill 2224? Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to express a concern about this bill. I am concerned that it does give up some of our review authority in this state, and I understand that the department will keep an eye on that, and hopefully, if that starts to be a problem, we will do something about it. I also understand that we're not completely joining, but I view this as a first step, which is almost certainly going to have a second step. And I will support the bill, but with those, with those considerations, I really want to keep an eye on this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, I couldn't agree more with the comments that you make. We will keep an eye on it, and it will only be a first step if it turns out that the compact is good for consumers.
Thank you. Further comments, questions, concerns from the committee? Just that I too, share Representative Riley's concerns, as you may well know, about Oregon making sure the consumer is well served in this compact, and I appreciate that it does sunset for us to take a second look at it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, of course, share the concerns about protecting consumers in Oregon, and one of the reasons I support this bill is because I believe that this may give DCBS more time and resources to look at other issues like suitability, so I am going to be supporting this bill for that reason.
And I also agree with that, so I agree with both sides. So any further consideration on this?
It's just agreeable.
Not so far. Mike, look for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2224.
Any discussion on that? Any objection? I think this time we'll not hearing an objection. The amendments are so adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move that we send House Bill 2224 with the Dash 1 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bonamici moves House Bill 2224 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, Mike, would you call the roll?
Aye.
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 Aye. House Bill 2224, receiving the required votes declared passed, moves on to the floor. I'd like to close the work session on House Bill 2220. Oh, carrier on the bill. Somebody like to carry this bill?
Well, if I can take two in a row. Okay.
Representative Nelson. We'll carry the bill on the floor. Thank you. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2224. Next, we'll open a work session on House Bill 2792. And I don't see the proponents of the bill in the room for House Bill 2792. We heard no opposing comments about this bill. I believe it was a pretty straight bill that I'm a little bit familiar with. Just to remind the committee, it just provides that a water utility can mail the delinquency to the property owners only if the utility asserts that the property owners are responsible for the bill. So, Any discussion about this bill?
Just one. So this bill says you only send bills to people who owe the bill. Is that
pretty much it?
Okay. I just want to get that clear.
Pretty much it. And we heard no opposition to the bill. I think it's pretty straightforward. And it was fixing legislation that was previously passed a while back that has caused some discomfort for some of our utilities. So, no discussion. I would Ask for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2792 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bonamici moves House Bill 2792 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I would like us to, if this passes, for it to go on a consent agenda, if that's...
Mike, would you call the roll?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And any objections to this going on the consent calendar, or do we need to explain it in the committee's estimation?
Consent sounds great to me.
We'll place it on the consent calendar then. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2792. I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2002. And if we could get, again, the Department of Consumer and Business Services to come up first and get us started.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, again, Joel Ario, the Administrator of the Insurance Division with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. We have today two handouts for you. First, testimony on House Bills 2002, 3103, and 3321 because they're somewhat interrelated bills. And then we also have the recommendations from our health report, which we handed out last week because a couple of these bills speak to those recommendations. So I guess maybe I should start with a question for the chair. Would you like me to talk about all three bills or just focus on 2002 first?
Well, I see that as a request, and hearing that, I will go ahead and open the public hearing on House Bill 3321 and House Bill 3103, so you can talk about all three.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, because, again, I think they interrelate with each other, and I can speak to them as a package. We're here today in support of House Bill 2002, which carries out a couple of the recommendations from our health report, also in support of House Bill 3103. I believe Representative Nathanson is going to seek the opportunity to testify at some point during the hearing today on that bill, which she has sponsored. And we have some concerns, not opposed to, but have some concerns with House Bill 3321. I think the easiest way to talk about the three bills is to go back to what Director Streisinger testified to last week when she and I spoke to the committee about House Bill 3077. That bill affected the rating process for us across the board for all lines of insurance. These bills today affect just health insurance regulation, but the four basic questions that Director Streisinger laid out last week are the same ones that I think are answered and addressed by these bills today. And the first of those is which rates, insurance rates, should be regulated. So how broad is the scope of our authority? Secondly, for rates that are regulated, what standards should apply? What should the review standards be? Third, in reviewing the rates, what level of public involvement is appropriate, and fourth, who should be responsible for that review process. So if we walk through those questions in relation to those bills, we start with the first question, what rates should be regulated? In the health insurance market today, we regulate individual rates and small group rates, with small group defined as the as employers with 25 or fewer employees. There's also portability, which is a much smaller and more technical marketplace. But those are the two fundamental markets. We support House Bill 2002 on the question of what rates should be regulated, because it expands that regulation to include employer groups up to the size of 50. So instead of today's regulation of 2 to 25, we would have regulation of 2 to 50. Three basic reasons we support that, and again, this is recommendation, I think it's recommendation number 4 in our health insurance report. If you want to look for the more detailed explanation of our recommendation there, it's in the second attachment as recommendation 4. The first is that although today we only regulate rates in the 2 to 25 market, under federal law, there are a number of regulations that apply to groups all the way to 50. So today we have a lot of bureaucratic kind of requirements where there's some 2 to 25 pieces, then there's some 2 to 50 pieces, then there's some 26 to 50 exclusive pieces. It all gets very confusing for us and for the carriers. And so to combine our current state regulated pool with the federally regulated pool and have one uniform set of regulations from 2 to 50, we believe, is a streamlining measure that will help both us and the regulated community in terms of a lot of line drawing and difficult issues. Secondly, we believe these two markets are similar to each other. You will hear, I believe, from some of the carriers that there are differences, and there are some differences, but many of the requirements, because of federal law that apply to 2 to 25, also apply 2 to 50. For instance, probably the most important of those is that if a carrier offers any plan to any group under 50, any group from 2 to 50, they have to make that same plan available to every other employer in the state from 2 to 50. So even though we don't control the rate on those plans if they're rated, if they're 26 to 50, we do have the regulation that says if that plan is offered, it's got to be made available to the smaller groups as well. Another similarity is that in our rate report, our health insurance report, the pricing is pretty close between these two markets. One had a $239 average price, one had a $241 average price. Now, they're not completely comparable because most likely, as you go up the scale, groups buy more expensive plans. So, again, they're not completely comparable, but the prices are similar there. And so we think bringing those two markets together makes sense for those reasons as well. We do think that bringing those two markets together will create some disruptions in the marketplace on both ends. There are, as with all of these rating issues, when you change the rating, there are some winners and there are some losers. And so if we change the rating here, some groups will benefit during the transition, groups that have older, less healthy workers. Some groups won't benefit during the transition, groups that are younger and have more healthy workers. And so we agree with the part of House Bill 2002 that would have the rates phased in, and in the bill now it says phased in at no more than 10% rate changes per year, rate increases per year. We've had some discussion with the carriers, and there may be other ways that are more effective to phase in the rates. There also may be some ways that we can make the rating more flexible. Our current rating in the 2 to 25 market is a fairly aggressive form of regulation trying to equalize rates between the different types of groups, and we've had some discussions, and we're going to get some evidence, I think, we hope, within a short period of time here from the carriers as to what kind of effect the 2 to 25 rate bands would have in the larger market, and based on that information, we may be able to have some more flexibility in this market. It's always the tension, as everybody here well knows from last week's testimony, is that when you say we got to have protection to avoid anybody who's currently got really good rates from getting any kind of increase. There's also always the flip side, which is then there are other people who are getting not as good rates today who, if you don't move to the transition quicker, will continue to not have as good rates. So there's always winners and losers, and the balances here are difficult, but we would be willing to, and in fact are interested in trying to work with the carriers and the consumer community and others to have the right balance here. So that's point one, why we support House Bill 2002. Now we're to the second rating question from Director Streisinger's testimony last week, which is what regulatory standards should be applied to rate filings. And here, too, we support this bill, House Bill 2002, as a good strengthening of the rate review standards. In particular, the bill would call for the inclusion of net investment income and profitability as considerations in the rate review process. We also have proposed an amendment today that's attached to our testimony that would clarify in statute some of the standards that are currently used to do the reviews in the rate reviews that we currently do. So we think this bill is helpful in standardizing those. Health insurers' investment income is not as important as it is in the property and casualty side, because in property and casualty, the money may be claimed. Premium payments are held for longer periods of time, and so there's more investment income oftentimes. As you see from our report, their investment income on the health insurance side is about 1%. It's not a huge amount of money, but it is in the aggregate $43 million a year. And in the last filings for 2005, the profitability was in the neighborhood of a couple hundred million. We believe those issues should be taken into account as part of the rate review system, and so we support that aspect of 2002. The third question, and those are basically the two parts of House Bill 2002. The third question gets us into the next bill, which is House Bill 3103. The third question is, what level of public involvement should there be in the rate review process? Today, there's very little public involvement in the review of health rates. That is partly due to confidentiality provisions in the law, and it's partly due to just practical impediments to public access to those forms while our reviewers are reviewing them. The House Bill 3103 would change that by requiring that rate filings be made publicly available immediately upon submission. The way we would accomplish that is to post those rate filings on our web page, and we believe that would have three beneficial effects. First of all, it would just enhance the state's commitment to public accountability. People would be able to see the process, it would be more transparent. Second, it would give people who do have input and comments on rate filings a much easier access to those filings, and the ability to comment more quickly in real time to what is filed. I can't predict you exactly how much of that kind of comment there would be, but we would certainly welcome comment that would help us do the review process. And third, we believe it would enhance competition. As we've talked about this bill with the carriers, they have pointed out something that I think demonstrates that, which is the most likely first audience for these rate filings as they go up on the web page will be other insurers. They will be watching each other carefully and seeing what is being proposed. And we think that accelerates the speed at which innovation goes into the marketplace and encourages more aggressive forms of competition, which we think ultimately benefit the consumer. Now, you probably also hear from them that at times there may be trade secrets in those public filings that would harm competition if they were disclosed. And so the bill does have a provision to allow for the protection of trade secrets that would harm competition, and we think that is a safety valve that's necessary here too. But on the whole and on the main, we think more transparency, more public involvement, more carriers watching each other would be to the benefit of the marketplace. Finally, there's the fourth question of who should do the rate reviews, and that gets us into the third bill, which is House Bill 3321, and that bill would create the rate review board approach that was also included in House Bill 3077. And as Director Streisinger said last week, we have some concerns with that because it potentially sets up a situation where we in the department as a solvency regulator have one set of concerns, and they're with a company that's in shaky financial situation, and we may be saying keep those rates where they are, are, or maybe even increase them to prevent the company from going insolvent. And meanwhile, there could be a second regulator through the Rate Review Board who's saying those rates are not affordable, and so you have a potential clash there. We do think that that issue needs to be addressed and that there has to be some way of reconciling the needs for both the financial regulation and the solvency regulation and effective oversight of rates, and that the best way to do that is to keep the responsibilities in one place. The other thing that, House Bill 3321 does is it doesn't regulate the markets that we currently regulate, so it exempts the individual and small group markets, but it does regulate the large group markets, so groups larger than 50, which may have some public policy rationale behind it. The point that we made last week that I'd point out again here today is that in that market, particularly as you get into the larger groups, the way that the rating process works is the employer sits down with their benefit consultants, perhaps the union, if there's a union in the shop, and then negotiates a pretty much a unique rate for case by, you know, business by business. And so it's hard to see exactly at what point in that process the rate regulation responsibility would kick in after there'd been that negotiation, and how would it work when you're talking about not so much uniform rates across a large number of businesses, but pretty much uniquely negotiated rates on a case-by-case basis. So there, I think there's some challenges to rate regulation in that market. And then, of course, there's also considerations about whether it's needed and whether those businesses have the leverage today to negotiate in the marketplace without the benefit of rate regulation. So those are my comments, again, organized around the 4 points that Director Streisinger made last week. And I, again, would say these are very important bills. We welcome the opportunity to be up here today. And as you see, the first two of these bills address very specific issues that we think would enhance the marketplace. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the committee. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In all of that, I heard one thing that concerned me a little bit, and I'm not quite sure why it concerned me, but it did. And that is the question of rate for solvency adjustment. You know, if a carrier is having trouble competing in the marketplace and can't bring the rates down to where everyone else is, should you be encouraging to keep their rates up to be solvent, or should they get out of the market?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, a very good question. That's exactly the rub issue that we would be in those situations. And we've not had an insolvency in the state now in some 15 to 20 years since 1991, but we have had these very kind of discussions. Our general answer will be to encourage people to pull out of markets in which they can't offer competitive rate, because it's a self-defeating proposition to stay in those markets, as your question suggests. But there will be lots of complicated issues at times about the transition. They already have a book of business, and how quickly are they transitioning out of that book of business? So those would be more of the issues. But you're absolutely right. We're generally not going to encourage someone to be seeking new business in a market where they can't offer a competitive rate. That's not going to help them get back on their feet financially.
Questions, Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Chair. The question I have and the concern I have is the limit, the increase to the premium rates to 10% per year. I don't know. I mean, I'm a little bit older than some people here, but there's been some pretty high inflation years. Court decisions can have a dramatic impact on rates. Statutes can have a dramatic impact on rates. Don't you think that we'd be better off not to lock that in statute?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gerard, a couple points there. One, the way the bill is worded, and I hope it accomplishes this purpose, is that the 10% limitation here applies only to the increment of increase attributable to this bill. So the underlying increases that may be due to medical trend and that sort of thing are intended not to be included in the 10% limitation. The second point to reinforce, as I testified there, that since the bill was written, we have heard comment that suggests there may be better ways to phase in changes here instead of having a certain limitation per year on rates, to have a time period to move to move the transition might be a better alternative. You may have further testimony on that. So we do remain open on exactly how to do that transition.
Further questions? Representative Nelson?
Yes, thank you. Joel, on House Bill 2002, because I can't address all of them at one time, two things I'm concerned about. One is this issue on if you are a company, the majority of your employees must live in this state if you are able to provide a health insurance policy. I hope I read that right. It's in Section 3, beginning with line 23.
I'm sorry, Madam, Mr. Chair, Madam Representative Nelson, you're on page...
It's page 4, and it begins on line 23.
On line 33?
23.
23.
Now, 33 is Representative Girard's issue.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, that the section referring to definition of small employer is the section. We're not changing the definition of small employer in terms of its relationship to whether people live in the state. We're only changing it in relation to whether it's 2 to 25 or 2 to 50.
Just a quick follow-up, please. Well, my concern is where you are increasing the number of employees from 25 to 50. Or you're increasing, I guess, really basically the number of, quote, small employers.
That's true. Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson is correct.
So, I guess I just don't see any discipline for, I mean, how if the majority of that firm, you know, on any set day would not include a majority. I mean, what are we going to do? Cut them out of the business? I mean, I just don't see here where, you know, we have any discipline.
Mr. Chair, Representative Allison, I think I understand your question. I apologize. I was a little slow on the take here to understand what you were asking. But
sorry.
If I understand now what you're asking, it's what happens to employers who don't fit under these definitions. They're simply not subject to the regulation. They wouldn't be subject to these small employer laws. They'd be free to operate. And in fact, they wouldn't have the rate regulation that we're proposing for this defined market. So this is simply saying people who fit these parameters, who have a majority of their workers within this state, 2 to 50, those groups would be subject to the rate regulation. Other employers would be free to operate. They simply wouldn't be subject to the rate regulation.
Just, and then my follow-up, if I could.
Okay.
So basically, if I don't want to have this bureaucratic rule making whatever responsibility, put upon me, I'm going to hire 51 employees.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, the more employers we can find in the state that will hire 51 or 100 or 200, the better off we are. I think that's right. If we've created incentives for people to hire more people, I think it's that'd be great.
Less rules.
Mr. Chair, again, House Bill 3321 speaks to rate regulation in the larger employer market, but we have not spoken in favor of that because we believe that when you get beyond 50 lives, that the marketplace does function pretty effectively, the competitive marketplace, as a rate regulator.
Thank you. And with that, I see Representative Nathanson is in the audience, so I may excuse you, and I reserve the right to call you back and ask you more questions.
Mr. Chair, I believe her office asked that I be here with her testifying in case of technical questions. I'll move to the side for her.
Okay, great. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you.
And Representative, just so you know, we are under public hearing for House Bills 2002-3103 and 3321 all at the same time right now, so you can go ahead and testify on 3103 if that's your intent.
It is. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Nancy Nathanson, State Representative, House District 13, that's North Eugene. Nearly 40% of Oregonians currently get their health coverage from the commercial health market. The concept described in this bill is one of about seven recommendations from a draft report that I read from the Department of Consumer and Business Affairs. That report addresses the difficulty of obtaining adequate health insurance for individuals and families. To quote the department, although employer-provided health insurance is still common in Oregon, 17% of Oregonians have no health insurance, and most Oregonians with coverage are paying more out of their own pockets for health care as employers shift more costs to employees. I recognize that you are hearing bills covering most of their other recommendations. I'd like to start with a quick statement of the problem. Rate filings are not readily available to the public. The process should be more transparent, to use a phrase that's popular. DCBS is responsible for approving rates for individual and small group health plans and is publicly accountable for the results of its rate review process. But the review process itself takes place almost entirely out of the public eye. Through a combination of confidentiality laws, trade secret protections, and lack of practical options for public access, the rate filings received by DCBS and reviewed by their actuaries are generally not available to the public during the review process. So the solution, this bill proposes a solution to open up those filings to public access. The bill requires a carrier's rate filings of individual, portability, and small employer group health benefit plans be made available for public inspection immediately upon filing with the department. The bill allows the director to make the filings accessible to the public by posting them on the department's webpage for easy access by stakeholders. The bill authorizes the director to exempt from disclosure portions of rate filings that contain trade secrets, as you have heard, that would harm competition if disclosed. I'd like to mention three key points about this bill. First, public rate review enhances public accountability. An open public process will enhance the state's commitment to public accountability. Public rate filings will facilitate public scrutiny and create opportunities for stakeholders to comment on specific rating issues and to offer alternatives. Public access to rate filings will also bring Oregon in line with other states that make rate filings public and open to scrutiny. Number two, public rate review enhances market competition. It's pro-competition. Creating a public review process will be beneficial to the health insurance market in Oregon. This bill will enhance market competition and accelerate the process by which innovative rating practices spread across the health insurance market. And finally, number three, the bill provides reasonable protection of trade secrets. An open and public rate review process is good for the health insurance market. However, the law should provide an opportunity for insurers to protect legitimate trade secrets. The bill does provide the needed protection where the insurer can demonstrate that disclosure would harm rather than enhance competition. One concern that I have heard regarding this bill is the possibility of creating an unfair advantage for some carriers as other filings are made public. As I reflect on the importance of remaining neutral and ensuring a level playing field, I would be happy to work with the committee to ensure fairness as the system is implemented. To address such concerns, the committee, for example, might want to consider the startup phase. For example, requiring the department to post the most recent filings from all the providers as a starting point so that comparable information for each is equally accessible to the public. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you. With that, does the committee have further questions, either of the representative or, and I don't know if you're in another committee right now.
I am.
So if anybody has questions for Representative Nathanson, we'll ask those right now. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Nathanson. You said at the end of your testimony something about posting the most recent filings to start, and I guess I wonder if maybe those might have some of the trade secrets that you're talking about protecting because they were filed without the intention of making them public. And also, from either of you, I'd like sort of an example of what might be a trade secret that would fall within these protections. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, the kinds of trade secrets would be some new way of approaching the rating issues that the carrier would be able to show have unique value to them, haven't been shared elsewhere. I'm not thinking of a specific example. It might be a good question to ask the insurers themselves. One of the questions, though, in terms of how many of these trade secrets there are, I like to ask when I'm in a room with the carriers, is how many of you have worked for more than one carrier in the last couple years? And usually most people in the room can raise their hand. So there's already a lot of knowledge between the carriers on what each of them are doing, and this just speeds up the process a little bit.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bonamici, I will add, in answer to the first question about posting the most recent filings for everyone to make a level playing field and what if there were a trade secret contained in there, that's a difficult technical, possibly complex issue that the department would have to review, how to ensure fairness and a level playing field and yet protect the trade secret. I certainly wouldn't want to casually and callously automatically post everything without a review process.
Thank you.
Any other questions for specifically Representative Nathanson? Representative Gilliam.
Representative, thank you for being here. You spoke very articulately about this. I'm on this committee sort of out of dumb luck, but I'm just interested in your interest and background in this subject.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gilliam, I have no professional background or technical ability in this area. My interest comes strictly from my concern for the rapidly escalating costs of health care and access to health care insurance, my interest in doing everything we can, whether it's regard to the cost of health care or of the insurance. It's strictly as a citizen and as a state representative to look comprehensively at the system and to protect consumers while also protecting the interest of competitive business, protecting the interest of fairness, but it is through no professional knowledge or training.
Thank you. Have you extended your question?
Yes.
Dumb luck.
At least it was luck. Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Representative Nathanson, it's nice to have you in the legislature this year. Can you help me just, I've searched and searched, where specifically does it state what information will be given to the public? My belief is that generally the public wouldn't understand this. Let me give you an example. If I could, please, a couple of terms ago, I wanted the legislature to be able to assess the overhead of the agencies here. We all heard that the lottery administration was only 1.5%, whereas, you know, DAS has 40%, you know. Well, because most of us in, you know, private business pay close attention to overhead. Well, unfortunately, this was over the head of our Legislative Council because they did not have a definition specifically for overhead. So I see back over here where we're going to report administrative costs in another one of these bills. We don't define what those are. To some people, you know, certain things are included and just because of the nature of the business. But I don't know what information we're going to give the public, and I'm just curious, is there a place I could find this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, I'll make a brief comment and then rely on an expert to provide the detail. My comment is, yes, I believe that posting filings is important, yet it is, as you have pointed out, it's very technical, detailed information that may be difficult to understand. I anticipate that some of the interest will be from people trained in reviewing these sorts of filings on behalf of the public, public interest representatives who do have more skill than I would, for example, if I were to pore over dozens and hundreds of pages of documents available on the web. I would ask for assistance in the technical issue of exactly what will be posted.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, the bill essentially creates the presumption that every part of the red flag will be posted, but for parts that can be shown to be trade secrets that where the disclosure would harm the public. So there will be a large volume of material. I think your comment is right on in the sense that most of the time, most of the members of the public will have little or no interest in reviewing it, but as Representative Nathanson suggested, some of the competitors will. Oftentimes, people who are very interested in rates for large groups hire people who would peruse these filings and look at specific things. So I think you're basically talking about experts either hired by companies or by people who are negotiating rates with companies would be the people who would primarily look at the material. The other thing I should point out is that this is not a sea change in how the rate filing process works today. There is today, because Oregon's an open government state, a lot of access. In the end of the day, people can get to these rate filings, but there are some provisions in current law that create protections, categorical protections around certain material in these that are potentially part of these rate filings. And then, as a matter of practice, the way we've operated up until today has not made the process very open. So this bill creates an opportunity that we really wouldn't have without the web to be able to post a lot of material and make it available to a lot of people with the notion that unless you're interested, you don't have to look at it. It's just another thing out there on the web for those that are.
Thank you for that. I'm going to go ahead and excuse Representative Nathanson so you can get back to other business. And I appreciate you bringing your bill forward and presenting it to us today. And I'm sure if we have other questions of you, people can contact you directly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Riley.
Just a comment to hopefully add to the last answer. There will be probably advocacy groups in addition to those others that were mentioned that will be looking very carefully at these rate postings.
Good point. Other questions for Mr. Ariel? Representative Nelson, we do have other people who want to testify today, but go ahead with one more.
Okay, well, you know, if the purpose of Nancy's bill, 3103, is for the public, I mean, to me that specifically tells us that we need to determine what information, through a survey or some means, what information would help the public make good decisions based on what, and if that could, you know, if you could give us some information, I would be most appreciative. I notice that we spend a lot of time saying what the insurer can and cannot do. For example, he will have a portability clause. He will have, you know, all these different benefits. But as far as how the rates for those benefits are determined, we have nothing. And in one of the, I think it's in your first bill, talks about actuarials, you know, some appraisers who appraise this data in some cases, but in other cases they don't. So we're really not getting apples to apples. I'm just curious if you might just let me know, or we could talk later. How are these appraisals made? What data do we get on what, with what criteria?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, all extremely good questions. I'll try to give a very general answer about transparency, which the further we've gotten into it, the more it's like peeling an onion. Each time you take back a layer, new complexity appears in under layers, and you're kind of never going to get maybe to the core. But it's still important to keep trying to make the system more transparent. For consumer purposes, we have another bill, I think, that's our major effort this session, which is House Bill 2213, to give consumers very specific information about their cost obligations with their insurance contracts. This bill, I do think, is more, as Representative Riley suggests, for the experts, whether they be the insurers themselves, the advocacy groups that hire experts, and I think we're talking more like the SEC makes a lot of information available about the stock market, not so much because the individual people who have investments there can understand all that detail, but they count on other people who can understand that, who then translate it to them. And I think most of the information you're going to find in these rate filings is going to be the kind of technical information that only an expert would want to look at. But some of those work for the companies. Some of them, as Mr. Riley, Representative Riley points out, some of them work for advocacy groups, and we want all of them to have access to that information.
Thank you. Mr. Aereo, just a couple of quick ones. So in House Bill 2002 and Bill 3103, these bills apply to insurance plans for small employers. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, small employers and individual and portability markets.
So in your discussion, and of course last week as well, it was mentioned that, you know, because of the market forces that large employers, you know, we really don't need to look at. And I'm just curious about that assumption in regards to the insurance premiums and rates themselves and the benefits that they are providing or dropping as such. And I'm curious about the assumptions that the market is the best handler of that review.
Mr. Chair, very good question. I try to be careful in my language. We don't want to say that there is no role for rate regulation in that market. The legislature may decide that there is, but it's a different type of consideration than these smaller markets where there really isn't any market leverage and the rates are pretty much off-the-shelf rates that are used uniformly for groups. You have just a different kind of situation with uniquely negotiated rates and more leverage. But I would certainly echo your comment that even the largest employers have difficulty keeping their health care costs down, and part of that is the responsibility of insurers. A much bigger part of it is that no matter whether you're an insurer, the federal government, or whoever you are in today's healthcare marketplace, no one has figured out how to control healthcare cost inflation. And so I think but the idea that rate regulation is a possible solution to that in larger markets, I didn't mean to say it couldn't be done, just that it was a different type of marketplace and it would take different kind of considerations.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions of Mr. Aereo, I thank you for your comments and your testimony today getting us started.
Thank you.
At that, I think I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3321 and House Bill 3103 and remain open for House Bill 2002. Next up, Elise Brown, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Holvey and members of the committee. Elise Brown with America's Health Insurance Plans. We represent approximately 1,300 members across the country in insuring over 2 million lives. And here to talk to you today about House Bill 2002. And in Joel's testimony earlier, he talked about two words, disruption and evidence. And with that, I believe your goal and industry's goal and Joel's goal would be to look for a solution that will minimize disruption to the market. And it's because of that that these plans, Regents, HealthNet, Providence Health Plans, Kaiser, Pacific Source, LifeWise, United Health Plans, and ODS are working with AHIP currently on a data call. This data call is modeling CHI and HIPAA with a 2-to-1 rate band as an endpoint. Again, we're doing this in various steps to allow for understanding of what this approach would look like from a gradual perspective. So, again, we are in the process of collecting the data right now. We are expecting the results no later than April 4th. So we ask the committee's indulgence and permission to come back with you with that information. And we're hoping, actually, to sit down with you, understand the information, and come back to you with some recommendations that we believe will end yield a positive result for the market. And with me today is Nancy Nevins with LifeWise, in case you have specific questions about what that data call looks like.
Did you have testimony you wanted to give, Nancy, or just to answer questions?
And primarily to answer questions in support of the information we're gathering to determine impact on the marketplace.
Okay. Do I have questions from the committee? Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Is it Alice or Elise?
Elise.
Okay. Elise, I've quoted from you before earlier today. Were you here? What you had said on a previous bill. I saw. I just happened to see your name there. And your name's?
Nancy Nevins.
Nevins?
Nevins.
Nevins.
I represent LifeWise Health Plan of Oregon.
LifeWise?
LifeWise.
LifeWise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is this a Oregon-based corporation?
America's Health Insurance Plans, it's a national trade association. We represent...
A trade association.
Right.
Okay.
Representing health plans across the country. The list I gave you, most of them are members of America's Health Insurance Plans.
So if I could please follow up, Nancy?
I haven't heard a question yet.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, I didn't put a... Is it, is it? Or isn't it?
Follow
on the end of that.
Awesome,
okay, follow up. So LifeWise, is that a plan or organization that overlooks plans? It's an advocacy group.
No. Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, LifeWise Health Plan of Oregon is an Oregon domestic carrier, and we do health plans in the state of Oregon that serve the individual, small employer, and large employer market.
Follow up, please.
Follow up.
So which of these do you fall under? I mean, are you going to be one of these under the 50, so you're going to, your data is also going to be under the small employer market, but you're also going to be in the large employer market?
Yes. Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, the data we're pulling for the 26 to 50 marketplace, and to determine the impact of the rate band being expanded from the current small employer market, which is 2 to 1 or 2.5 to 1, depending on where we are in the time of the year, to expanding that to the entire market for 2 to 50. So which currently has rate bands in excess of 2.5 or 2 to 1. And what we're going to do is determine where's the primary impact. Joel had indicated that there's going to be winners and losers, and what we want to categorize is how many are going to be winners and how many are going to be losers. So we can present that information to determine and minimize market disruption.
And Chair Holvey, Representative Nelson, too, I just want to clarify that AHIP is the association. We are the third-party organization, if you will, that's in the position of collecting the information from all the plans in Oregon. So that's why we're sitting here together today.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Brown, you said that this data call, which I'm assuming is just a collection, you're gathering data from your members. You said you'll have the data by April 4th, and you asked us to hold off and wait till we get that data. But how long does it take you to analyze it and process it and figure out a recommendation and a position on the bill after you get the data?
Representative Bonamici, that's a great question. We expect it on Wednesday, and it's going to be a fully loaded comprehensive summary with charts that we expect. I guess I would request that we had at least a couple of days to look at the information. I think our initial request with the Chair Holvey is that we would be able to come back to you on April 9th with some recommendations.
A follow-up briefly?
Follow-up.
Thank you. And do you anticipate this data is particularly relevant to House Bill 2002, and it will help you form a position on the bill and perhaps give us some guidance on the disruptions or lack thereof?
Representative Bonamici, exactly. We understand that there is going to be some disruption, but I can't tell you today exactly how deep that's going to be, and it will be helpful once we have the numbers in front of us to guide us forward.
Thank you.
Representative Galizio, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where do you see major, in terms of major issues, similarities or differences in terms of these, 2002, with regulations in other states? It's been it was mentioned in Mr. Arrio's testimony that other states have, for example, the provision to allow the public. So I'm just wondering, because you represent sort of from a national, and how unique and where do you see major differences?
Sure. What I have, Representative Galizio, and I neglected to bring it with me today. We have a chart, actually, that AHIP has shared with Joel. I don't have it on me at this moment, so I can't speak to the specifics, but I'm happy to get that to you, not as early as today, but I promise it tomorrow.
Further questions from the committee? Well, I appreciate your testimony and your data call on this, and I rest assured our committee will have another public hearing probably after April 9th to take a look at your information, hopefully digest it and come back and have another public hearing on this bill. I think it's important that we look at your data. So I appreciate your effort on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, I'd like Laura Etherton and Luke Shepherd.
Thank you, Chair Holvey and members of the committee. My name is Laura Etherton. I'm the consumer advocate with Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, or OSPIRG. We're a statewide nonpartisan nonprofit public interest organization, and we focus quite a bit on consumer protection issues. Currently, right now, I think everyone knows Oregonians are facing ever increasing health insurance costs, increasing premiums, increasing deductibles, having to pay more in terms of co-payments, higher co-insurance, and this is having a huge impact on individuals and businesses around the state. Many people feel like they keep paying more and more, and even that the benefits go down more and more, and more of the costs are getting shifted onto the consumers. In terms of moving toward a solution, it will take a number of different approaches, and at OSPIRG we recognize that that is going to take a lot. It will take actually reining in the ever-increasing cost of health care itself, but it also will take making sure that rate increases in the insurance market are justified, and making sure that the process to determine whether they're justified is fully informed and that the public can participate in that. We want to applaud the work of the Department of Consumer and Business Services in pulling together the report, which is very helpful, the Health Insurance in Oregon report. It definitely shed some light on the health insurance piece. A couple of factors I want to note pulling from that report. At the same time that we've seen a lot of increases in health premium costs, profitability of Oregon's eight largest health insurers has increased during that time as well, ranging in 2005, for example, from 2 to 9%, depending on the provider. And this has resulted in quite significant surpluses as well. I think five of the eight largest insurers have seen their surplus levels more than double since 2001. And that's significant, that if those trends increase together with the ever-rising costs in health insurance, I think it spells something very bad for consumers and for employers who are trying to afford these increases. So in terms of the solutions, I wanted to talk briefly about a number of the different bills, which I think all together really do help to move Oregon in the right direction. In terms of opening the process to more observation and public participation, House Bill 3103 moves forward in that direction.
Excuse me. If you want to testify on both bills, I'll need to reopen that hearing.
Sorry.
It was not my intent to hear them both at one time, but if that fits into your... I guess I can do that.
I'm happy to do it any way the committee chooses.
I'm going to go ahead and reopen the hearing on House Bill 3103.
So House Bill 3103 helps to move forward, making the filings more public, and we would definitely recommend also making sure the public can participate through hearings, comment periods, et cetera. In terms of helping to make sure that the standards and the protections for consumers are adequate, a number of the bills, 2202, for example, makes additional improvements, expanding the factors taken into consideration during rate review to include profitability, investment income, and that's important both to set clear standards on what's acceptable in terms of rate increases and making sure that the whatever entity it is that is looking at those rate increases has full information. And then finally, one suggestion is that as we are, of course, facing increasing healthcare costs overall, that that we recommend that there's measures taken to make sure insurers are playing a role in helping not just to pass through to the consumer or to the purchaser the high cost of health care, but that these insurers are also doing everything they can to help in the effort to cost containment. And the Department of Consumer and Business Services report highlighted a number of cost containment strategies that insurers can use and which should be encouraged. Everything from encouraging the use of the most effective and least cost medications through prescription drug formularies to effective management of acute and chronic illnesses to wellness initiatives and keeping people healthy in the first place. So we urge the legislature to include those broader pieces also in the rate review considerations and to encourage the use of effective cost control policies that actually improve or maintain quality and safety in healthcare. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you go ahead and give your state your name, Duke, and
Duke Shepherd with the Oregon AFL-CIO, and I'll be incredibly brief because I'd like to save my comments for later, for mostly for 3321. But I will say that on House Bill 2002, the Oregon AFL-CIO supports the inclusion of profitability investment income in the DCBS rate review system. We think this will help shed some light on where rate money is going with insurers and help provide important information for consumers that isn't currently readily available. And with that, I'll come back later. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Galizio.
A question and observation and then a question. My observation is I'm wondering if this is an indictment. Senator Westland said that all of this was going to be moot, so I'm wondering if this is an indictment of his his outlook on health care. But my question is, do we have any idea what percentage of the insurance companies that we're talking about are publicly traded companies? I should have asked. I'm sorry, I thought about this before, but I think that would be interesting to know in terms of what information is available and the status quo.
Yep. Mr. Chair and Representative Galizio, that is a number off the top of my head that I do not know, but most are actually nonprofit organizations.
Other questions? Representative Riley.
I mean, nonprofit or not-for-profit, there is a difference.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, I'm not sure. I will find out for you.
I believe you'll find not-for-profit is probably correct.
Seeing no Representative Nelson.
Well, you know.
I almost got there.
I know. Well, every time we do this, we find out great information, and I appreciate it. And, you know, in your statement where you talk about, for example, Laura, the requirement to use drug formularies, good luck. you know, we have trouble trying to get that here in the legislature, four terms. But anyway, I'm just wondering, the excess costs that we're putting on these insurance providers, are we taking that under consideration?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I think in terms of all the additional costs that insurance companies pay would certainly be part of any justification for a rate increase, but it is just one of many factors that would be taken into effect. And certainly, I think what everyone wants is for overall health care to move toward measures that save money and which improve health outcomes. Did I answer your question?
It's okay.
Or did I?
I'm not going to ask another one.
Representative Riley.
I would like to ask another one, Mr. Chair. I'm in favor of having profitability and investment income as part of the rate review process, but maybe for another reason. I'm interested in how much the investment losses figure into rate increases. That's something that interests me, and I think that would come out to us as well.
Further questions, comments? Thank you for your testimony today. Give us another perspective. I appreciate it. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on House Bill 2002? If not, I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2002. And I would like to call up Jim Gravett on House Bill 3103.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Jim Gravett. I'm with Pacific Source Health Plans. And we support the concept of making filed rates available to the public. The only thing about this bill that we really oppose is whether it should be filed rates in contrast to approved rates that are disclosed to the public. We believe that, if you've seen a rate filing, and a small employer rate filing can be 2 inches thick. Mm-hmm. They're very complicated. We as a health plan actually hire outside consulting firms, national firms, to gather information with regards to trends on health care, maybe what it would cost to add a specific benefit, and these things do get very complicated. We question that a filed rate filing, and in our case, our last filing, we had two or three amendments to the filing before it was ever finalized. So we just question whether a filed rate would be useful to the consumer in contrast to an approved rate. It seems to me that a consumer relying on a filed rate rather than an approved rate might make some incorrect assumptions, particularly if they don't see the amendments to that filing prior to them having the thing analyzed, assuming that they would actually have it analyzed. Probably the big advantage to actually disclosing filed rates is to other carriers rather than the consumer. The insurance division seems to suggest that it would create some more competitiveness between what carriers do with their rates. Well, carriers go through a whole process to determine that those rates that they're actually appropriate in relation to the benefits that are included in those plans. And carriers at this point, in Oregon in particular, we keep a very close eye on each other with regard to new innovations and products, what other carriers are doing. As far as rates, we may look at where other carriers' rates are in relation to where ours are and try and figure out why we're not quite as competitive rate-wise, and there may be legitimate reasons for it, or there may be something we can do. In fact, we go through a process almost annually where we go through our benefit plans and to try and make ourselves more competitive, actually have to put limits on certain benefits or even cut out certain benefits, but we do watch each other very closely on what the other one's doing. So, again, I'm not sure that a filed rate would be that productive as far as consumers go. Only productive maybe in with what other carriers want to look at as far as their competition goes. So anyway, I thank you for consideration of this issue. If I can answer any questions, I'd be glad to do that.
I appreciate your comments. I think you posed a good question that we should consider. Any further questions? Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You talked about the competitiveness, and personally I see that as a byproduct, not the point of the bill. The point of the bill, to me, is to see those for the public and the people representing the public, to see those filings so that they can recommend those amendments to the people who are making determinations about rates. And so to only put the approved on sort of defeats the purpose of that, in my opinion. What do you think about that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, again, rate filings are very complicated, and we take in a lot of information, not only internally, but from outside our company, from firms that's all they do is they have actuarial staff that look at trends and what benefits can affect a health benefit plan. And for the public to go through that filing and either have somebody on staff or hire somebody to look at that would be a very expensive proposition. And then basically all they could really come down to is, are the benefits provided in that plan reasonable in relation to the rates that the carrier's asking for? And I think they're going to come up with the same decision that the Oregon Insurance Division actuaries come up. Typically, they would be gathering their information from the same sources. So I don't know that this really adds anything to what's already being done.
Follow-up, please.
Follow-up, Representative Riley.
So then it sounds like you really see no benefit at all to this, because what it's for is for the public to view, and if it's too complicated for the public, obviously there's no point in putting it out where we can see it.
Well, you know, we all feel that there should be some transparency, and right now it's true. The public does have access to what's already approved rates with some limitations. So the final conclusion would probably be, yes, this bill doesn't really add anything one way or the other to the process that we have now.
Thank you.
Further questions? Mr. Pivette, I'm just on one little aspect, an approved rate. You know, say a group of an association that has a bunch of small employers really wants to follow these rates. Would they be able? They wouldn't really be able to look at a pending rate approval then under an approved rate scenario, would they?
Mr. Chair, I'm not quite sure I understand the scenario that you're presenting here.
Well, if there was a request for a rate increase and it was pending, it hadn't been approved yet, there would be no public transparency of that pending rate approval.
basically what happens with the rate filing is they may be filed, let's take for example small employer rates, they may be filed once a year by the carrier. At least their formulas for determining rates would be filed. They may put in there that each quarter we need to trend up 1%, 2%, or whatever the national trend happens to be. When we present rates to an individual company for their consideration, we will take those rates that we have filed and apply them with the specific adjustments for that particular employer, and they will see those minimum 30 days, typically 60 days in advance of them making a decision as to which carrier seems to suit them better with regard to the benefits and the rates. Did that answer your question, Mr. Chair?
Well, maybe.
In other words, what I'm trying to say is they do get that information far in advance of having to make the decision about what benefit plan and what carrier they want to work with.
Right. So, and just one other thing, I noticed your approval of the concept of this bill, and previously had asked a question about the difference of if this is good for small employer plans, why wouldn't it be good for large employer plans? Just could you help explain that difference for me and where you think it wouldn't really apply to large employer plans?
We're talking about disclosure of rates under 3103, which I'm not sure that that's what that particular bill calls for. I believe it calls for
2002.
Yeah.
Oh, it was 2002. The small employer plans. I'm sorry. So this would be for all plans. It wouldn't be for just
small. This would be for House Bill 3103
right.
is for disclosure of all plans that are currently required to be filed.
Right, not just small plans. Okay.
Right.
Maybe I was asking you a question on another bill that we're not open for public hearing. Yeah. And if, I don't know, it just pointed out to me again that this is for health benefit plans for small employers, and maybe I can get DCBS to clarify that for me again, that House Bill 3103 applies to, if Joel, if you could come forward just for a moment so we can clarify that. I seem to have confused myself as well as a few others probably.
Mr. Chair, it applies to the markets where we get rate filings, which today are the individual, small group, and portability markets. So
large employers wouldn't be affected by, large employer plans would not be affected by House Bill 3103?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. If the committee chose to regulate large groups, you might want to choose to expand the concept in this bill equally. I think it's written now in terms of those three specific markets, but the concept was wherever we get rate filings, they should be transparent. So if the committee were to expand the markets that are to be regulated, we would support that those markets being transparent as well.
Thank you for that. That clarifies that for me. So now, Mr. Gravett, would you think it would be advantageous for us to regulate large employer plans for the same purposes that we're describing here?
Mr. Chair, the quick answer would be no, for some of the reasons that I think Joel presented earlier. Large employers have the ability to negotiate a lot of things within their health benefit plans, and there's a lot of things that are considered during that negotiation process. To get other people involved in that process, I think would hinder employers' ability to negotiate with carriers. And they seem to do, and Oregon's large employers seem to do a very good job at negotiating rates about as tightly as they can with carriers, and we are very competitive in that market. I'm just not sure that the disclosure of those rates or what's in this other bill would be appropriate in the large group market.
Okay, thank you. Representative Girard, your question?
Yeah, I have a kind of a concern, and that is if you made all the rates open and say you had a big carrier that wanted to cut rates and drive the little carrier out, this would be a good vehicle to do that, would it not?
It's a possible vehicle. I don't know that it's the best vehicle. We talked about carrier surpluses before. One of the things that a carrier will do with a surplus is to cut their rates and cut into that surplus and basically undercut other carriers at certain points. But those things are trendy. They may go on for a short period of time or a medium period of time, but at some point they have to stop. And then at that point, that particular carrier, at least historically, they've got to start trending their rates back up, and sometimes they may have overshot when they decrease their rates, and then you'll see sharp increases at that point.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Gravett, for giving us some more knowledge of the insurance industry. Appreciate your point of view. Appreciate you coming here to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 3103? If not, I'm going to close public hearing on 3103 and reopen public hearing on House Bill 3321. And first up, Robert Malesnik and Mike Dewey. Since we already heard from DCBS on this bill, I thought we'd jump in with you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
State your name for the record, please.
For the record, Mike Dewey, representing the ODS health plans. With me is Rob Ineslik, who is a lawyer with ODS, and he has testimony to present. He will discuss why we are in opposition to this bill. It's a very, if you will, I think, complicated piece of legislation. I don't think it's going to do much for the consumer when it's all said and done, but nonetheless, we do want to put our remarks on the record. He's not going to read his testimony, and we'll be happy to answer any questions after he finishes. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, again, my name is Robert Malesnik. I am the legislative liaison for the ODS companies. ODS is a multifaceted dental, medical, and professional liability insurance company. We work in Oregon, and we are specifically in opposition to this bill for four chief reasons. The first is that it duplicates DCBS's current function. Right now, the four main areas that DCBS will regulate are financial solvency, form approval, consumer protection, and rate approval. And this bill would just duplicate and drive more cost to a current system that's already in operation. The second reason why we are in opposition to this bill is that it makes the rate review process more political and not medical or actuarial. We worry that having seven independently appointed board members and not the current commission as it is would just increase the difficulty and increase the polarization of the actual legitimate arguments. Right now, ORS 742.005 states that if rate filings are disproportionate, DCBS can come in and modify and re-regulate. And I don't see any change or addition in creating a new administrative body to do a current function that the state is already paying money to do. Our third reason for objecting to the bill is because of the makeup of the review board. When you look at the language, it states that insurance providers will not be able to offer input or even serve on the board, but that doctors or consumers, actuarials, other people who are in the industry can. And we sort of view that as removing one leg of the table. At the City Club of Portland, Senator Ben Westland stated that insurance providers are, in fact, not the cause of health increases in this state, that it's a multifaceted responsibility and fault of all of ours, of people having sedentary lifestyles, of people going to physicians perhaps when they have a cold and demanding that they get antibacterial, and they say, well, it's a virus, and they can't do anything for it. Oh, give me the medicine. And so things like this that drive up the cost and then require providers to then cover that cost, the cost of hospitals, the cost of medical technology, life expectancy increases, all of these things factor into a number of reasons as to why health costs are actually increasing. And our last reason for objecting specifically is that it limits competition and consumer choice. Oregon is unique in the fact that we have 8 large insurance providers, and despite that number of 8, we actually only have none of them that cover more than 35% of a single market in any area. And that is unique not just in the industry but around the country, that a number of states just have 2 or 3 insurance providers, mega carriers, who can sort of dictate what their rates are, and especially for the large rate bands, the 50 employers or plus, because they have the ability to negotiate and bargain those rates more effectively, the strength that they have sort of lends itself to the creation and the ability of more consumers to choose from more insurance providers. So again, for those reasons, you know, ODS is an Oregon company. We've been here for 52 years. We cover about 750,000 lives, and we employ approximately 800 Oregonians. And we are in opposition to this bill, specifically on rate review, and I appreciate your time. And if I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to.
Any questions? I'm going to take Representative Bonamici. Make them hopefully short questions. We have other people yet to testify here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Malesnik, you have on page 2 of your testimony this list of what you identify are issues in the healthcare system. Are those the ODS issues that you've identified, or are those Senator Westland's?
Those Chair Holvey and Representative Bonamici, those were Senator Westland's statements from the Portland City Club. And it was in direct answer to a question that somebody had raised as to what are some things that we can do individually to try to help out the health issue. And he said that, well, we're all responsible, and we can all do things every day to try to address that.
So, brief follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up, please.
Thank you. So you acknowledge the problem, and you say that the House Bill 3321 is not the solution. Do you have any suggestions in a big-picture way of what do you suggest? If you don't want 3321, what would you like to see done?
I'm looking forward to this answer. Rob is new to ODS, so I'm looking forward to this answer.
Please, Mike, go ahead. I'll defer.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, I mean, that we could be here all day and tomorrow.
Right.
You know, we are weighing in on the reform issues as that is moving forward. We recognize that there are significant issues in healthcare, and we recognize that the increases that have gone on, recognizing though that, you know, we've started to see some moderation in rate increases over time, so that's some good news. But with life expectancy and the like, I expect that we're going to see some increases. But the bottom line is this is going to add some additional costs. With regard to rate regulation review, you know, I'm involved in telecom matters and other matters at the PUC, and we have that, and it makes sense where you have monopolies. We don't have monopolies here. If we did, there might be some consideration, but today we don't. And I suspect that there would be a surcharge, if you will, to the insurance companies to fund this. Again, that's an additional cost.
Representative Riley.
Very brief. And specific. You mentioned that this rate review board would reduce choice. In what way?
Chair Holding Representative Riley, I think it's going to reduce choice because you're going to require additional costs. And any time you had mentioned earlier that perhaps the smaller carriers, if they can't, you know, absorb some of that cost, maybe they shouldn't be in the market, maybe it's too expensive. Well, I would sort of submit that the ability to have those smaller carriers and to give that choice and to keep the cost of operation for them low is what does provide Oregon with the ability for those small businesses to grow into larger ones. That's why we do have 8 of those larger carriers here, because at one time they were the small minnow.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. And, you know, just as a note, you know, I know Senator Westland is well into this subject matter, but putting him as a healthcare expert on costs you know, may not just fly with everybody up here. But with that, I appreciate your testimony.
Well, he'll be
today.
Happy. And I don't think, though, with regard to the last sentence, that is an attribution to him. It is a conclusion. Thank you for your time.
All the same, I appreciate your testimony. Next up, I'd like to have Michael Becker and John Powell. Thank you, gentlemen. And we are short of time, and we're probably going to dispense with questions, so you might have lucked out there. I'm not sure.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Mike Becker with Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. In the interest of time, I won't go into detail as I did last week in regard to my testimony, but I am here today to testify in opposition to House Bill 3321, the Insurance Rate Review Board. As I mentioned last week in a hearing on a very similar bill, I've got 5 points I'd like to touch just briefly. First off, insurance rate review hearings and prior approval of rates should not be mistaken for health care reform. As noted in my testimony from the quote from John McConnell, the OHSU health economist, the real driver of health care costs is new technology, and that accounts for 50 to 75% of the increase, the annual increase in health care spending. Secondly, insurance administrative costs are modest and have remained relatively flat, and you'll see the substantiation for that that point both in Joel, in my testimony and in the report by the insurance department. My third point is that health insurer income is also very modest and widely swings over the years. You will see as recently as 2005 and 2003 decreases in net gain from insurance operations in the state by carriers such as Regents. So it is a very cyclical business in which we operate. And though the past 2 years have shown gains, those gains are moderating, and I can assure you they will swing back into the negative column very quickly. The fourth point is, as the last testimony indicated, Oregon and the insurance industry here in Oregon does not fit the monopolistic model of a public utility. If we try to impose this rate review model in the health insurance arena for large groups, we will quickly bring the regulatory environment to its knees. Regents alone in the 50-plus group market insures over 2,000 large groups in this state, each one of which would have to go through this rate review hearing process on its negotiated rates and benefits. The fifth point I will make is that there are numerous unintended consequences from moving to this type of rate regulation, and we would urge you to do not pass a recommendation on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon as well. I would simply say for the committee's benefit, I think when you get to large groups, those groups see their claims data, they know what they're spending on health care, and they know what margins there are. They're not pooled in the same way that the small groups and individuals are. And as a consequence of that, they're in a very good negotiating posture. They don't need a public hearing to know where they stand and where they're going. Many of the changes in benefit design are actually promoted by the purchasers and the unions in many cases. For example, the industry took huge slams decades ago about 3-day maternity hospital stays. Those actually came from unions plans that were getting killed by maternity costs. They wanted to add other health care benefits and actually requested some kind of control over the maternity side of their benefit package. And many times it is that kind of work between the carriers and the purchaser that leads to innovation and new ideas. That one didn't last long, as you might expect. 51% meant something in that case. But I don't know how, again, as we talked about the bill that would include all lines, I don't know how this would work when you have someone who is the purchaser of a product who has the data in front of them, or a consultant with the data in front of them, negotiating with two or three different plans. And then at what point do you have to run it and file in order to get approval? I just don't think that works. We worked with SEIU 2 years ago on this concept. We couldn't come to some methodology making it work. We passed the bill, Senate Bill 501, which requires health insurers to annually, by category, list the rate increases of that category on an annual basis. Last year was the first year of the filing. This year, there will be a filing that shows the difference between last year and the year before in each category of rates and overall as well. So that's how we resolved the bill last time. And again, it's beyond me to know how this would work.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and I think you answered one of my earlier questions better than anybody else so far, so I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Next up, I'd like to have Laura Etherton, Duke Shepherd, and Mary Beth Healy. And I'm sorry for the short time frame, not managing our questions and testimonies as well as we should. You have just a couple of minutes apiece. If that.
Duke, you want to start off?
Hello, Duke Shepherd, Oregon AFL-CIO. I've handed out written testimony, so I'll kind of skip around it as best I can. I have some national data that between 2000 and 2005, insurance rates rose 73%, while workers' earnings rose only 15%. But in Oregon, worker pay didn't go up that fast, and in fact dropped from $48,000 a year to $44,000. That's an 8% drop. So while our members and working people all over Oregon are frustrated by the increases, what's even more frustrating is trying to ask why. And not having a readily accessible public place to get an answer. We've had a public utility commission in Oregon for many, many years, and this proposal is not a precise duplicate of the PUC, but when you look at the PUC website, there are a couple quotes there that are helpful. The PUC conducts its business in public meetings scheduled every 2 weeks at its headquarters in Salem, and it encourages public involvement in its decisions. The commission's primary responsibility is to ensure that customers receive adequate services at fair and reasonable rates, and we are required by law to see that the regulated companies are allowed an opportunity to earn a fair return on their investments. There is no comparable public body acting on behalf of consumers in Oregon to bring transparency and accountability to a sector of consumer services that we would argue to be at least as important as energy. Nor is there a venue for meaningful public involvement. The PUC has its fans and detractors, but ultimately it is a public body with the public interest, with legitimate authority to act on consumers' behalf while balancing the need for a reasonable rate of return. We haven't been able to find a comparable body to that proposed in this bill anywhere else in the country. And that's not a reason to do it, but I would also say it's not a reason not to do it, because we haven't found any place in the country that solved health insurance either. So being bold isn't a bad thing. And finally, Representative Glizio raised earlier, this bill is only one important part of the larger health insurance and health care conversation happening in the Capitol. We're supportive of those efforts, and we believe that putting this concept into those efforts is important, and we find it entirely compatible with all those efforts that are happening. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, thanks so much for letting me testify today. My name is Mary Beth Healy. I'm Executive Director of Oregonians for Health Security, and we're a statewide healthcare advocacy organization. And I'll be very brief. I do have written testimony, but two quick things. Mr. Powell was talking about Senate Bill 501 that was passed last year. I thought it would be helpful for members of the committee, or last session, excuse me, to know precisely what insurers are now required to submit for public posting. And that would be the total number of members that they serve, the total amount of premiums that were paid into them, the total amount of costs for claims, the medical loss ratio, and the average amount of premiums per member per month, and the percentage change, which I think is very important, in the average premium per member per month measured from the previous year. So it will be very interesting to see what happens next month, because it will be the second year in a row. And I bring this up for two reasons. One is that we are already, I think Senate Bill 501 passed in the 2005 session was a really good first step in getting the accountability and the transparency that as purchasers of health insurance, we actually all need. The unsustainable rates that Duke talked about in terms of wages, but that we as Oregonians are paying, whether the state, small businesses, large businesses, but small businesses or individuals. I have a small nonprofit, and we have seen our health insurance premiums go up every single year. Last year it was 15.7%, over the year before, which had been 12%. So it's quite a lot of money for a small operation. This year we just got our renewal, and it's going to be 6.6%. Now, while it's a decrease from what it's been, it's still an increase. I'd like to think that Senate Bill 501 and that transparency and the light that we've shown on this subject was helpful in getting that. Don't know for sure, but I'd like to think that. But what we need to do is getting to the question why. And whether it's a rate review board as one tool that we can use to find out where our premium dollars are going, that I think is really the charge of this committee, because we don't know the answer why. And when I asked my agent why our premiums went up, what she said to me was, well, Mary Beth, you know, I see that you don't have your employees pay anything towards their health insurance. Well, no, we don't. We'd like to be a standard, right? I see that you offer dental, vision, and, you know, you don't have to do that. Well, yes, you kind of do. That is a complete health care package. My point is that their answer to my question why was not why have your premiums gone up. It was what can you do to shift more of your costs to your employees. And that's not a solution that I think any of us would agree with. And just in the interest of time, I will stop there and wait for questions and allow Ms. Etherton.
I thank you for that. In the interest of time, Laura. I will allow you to say you support the bill or oppose it, and that's about it.
Chair Holby, members of the committee, I'm Laura Etherton, consumer advocate with OSPIRG. I think that we support the bill. It's important to protect consumers from rates that are excessive or unaffordable. House Bill 3321 makes a number of improvements to the law, and specifically with regard to the standards for what's an affordable and not an excessive rate. And we do think it would be beneficial to have those standards and factors also apply to the small group and portability markets in addition to the large groups. Thank you.
Thank you for your brevity, and I apologize for that in our time management and question period. I apologize. So I appreciate everybody's testimony today, and with that, I'd like to close the hearing on House Bill 3321 and adjourn. We would like to suspend the rules. Can I have a motion to suspend the rules to allow Representative Gilliam to vote?
Yes. I move that we suspend the rules to allow Representative Gilliam to vote.
Representative.
On House Bill
2221. As amended.
As amended.
Aye.
Representative Gilliam votes aye on House Bill 2221 as amended. Thank you for reminding me.
Thank you very much.
With that, I would like to adjourn the Committee on Consumer